Welcome everybody to a new Sefer, Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Vayikra, 5769. Now, as we begin a new Sefer, I recall as I was walking into class that when we began the book of Shemot, we became aware of this four-line space between one book and the other, and that was telling us, think a lot. Before you start, contemplate what is the approach to the Sefer. So, whatever we discuss today, I hope that it will serve as that that push into the new Sefer of Vayikra, which we will be on for several months. When we open up to Sefer Vayikra, we are immediately met with the Korbanos. And the very first question we have to ask ourselves is, what are the Korbanos and what does that word mean? And traditionally, Americans have translated them sacrifices, offerings. I consulted the Art Scroll commentary to Sefer Vayikra, and I looked at the overview, and the first thing he says, the purpose of offerings is, it's a misunderstood word. The word korban is commonly translated either sacrifice or offering, but the truth is that the English language does not possess a word that accurately expresses the concept contained in the word. How do you like that? The word korban cannot be translated in English. The word sacrifice, and he shows why these English commonly translated words fall short of the essence of a korban. The word sacrifice implies that the person bringing it is required to deprive himself of something in order to satisfy someone else's need. I sacrifice for you. I give up, I forego on what I take so that you can have. That's the implication of the word sacrifice.
It's even more of an example, isn't it?
What? Sacrifice? Corbin. Sacrifice would be?
Korban. Would be more of an example. This is
but,
what should be done to you, but it's being done to
you. Okay, all right, you're giving an alternative interpretation. We'll get to that.
Oh.
I'm just trying to show why the word sacrifice does fall short. And in fact, God finds no satisfaction in inflicting pain or deprivation upon his children. So he doesn't need anything for us. He doesn't like to see us in pain. So it's not really a sacrifice. The word offering is closer to the mark. It's better, but it's not good enough. Indeed, we use it in our translation for lack of a better one. But it too fails to convey the true meaning of a korban. Offering implies that the recipient of the gift must be appeased, that he requires a tribute that will somehow assuage his wrath or make him receptive to the entreaties of a supplicant, or that he has a need that can only be satisfied by someone other than himself. So offering falls short.
But don't we get that sort of a feeling with the Reach?
Reach Nicholach?
Well, yeah, because that implies that there is a satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying Reach Nichoach doesn't just mean a good smell.
No, God doesn't smell.
But it's pleasing to him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's getting closer. Mm-hmm. God does get something, or maybe he doesn't get anything, maybe we get something. And that's how you get even closer. So he says that the word korban does, it may not have a translation in English directly, but it does come from the Hebrew root karov, which is close. So it's something that has something to do with man drawing closer to God. But what exactly does that entail? That's what we're going to explore today with God's help.
Well,
please. No. Now's the time.
Well, just from a Latin, it just seems to make holy is what it means. It's to make sacred. Or to make holy. Sacrificio.
That's the word kadosh. But this is the word karov.
Sacrificing means.
No, but the word sacrifice.
Oh, the word sacrifice.
Itself. Sacrifice.
It means, it's from the Latin to make.
Is that right?
Yes, yeah. I know. But oh. Like, oh, yeah, but it has nothing to
sacred.
Do.
I never.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
In the,
hello.
In the second part,
anybody
of, it means to make.
Okay. Well, that fits in with the Hebrew word kadosh. And it's interesting that the Talmudic word for sacrifices is kadoshim, which really is translated as, you know, holy works or something. Very good. How are you, Dr. Schultz?
Fine.
Welcome.
Good to be with you.
Good to see you. Yes.
It says in the notes that to the Stone Chumash that God is pleased because his order has been followed.
Mm, right. Right. All right. Let's see what we can do. And if what we're going to be helped this time, as really I think we are each time, by our sister study, our companion study of Mesilas Yesharim, of the Path of the Just by Rabbi Lusato. And really all along, and the whole reason why I chose to study the Path of the Just as we study the Parsha, which one could question, what is, you know, they're both very worthy studies, but one has, what does one have to do with the other? And that the answer is that it is only with a proper understanding of man's purpose in the world that we can begin to appreciate what the Torah is about. Because after all, the Torah is our aid to accomplish our purpose. It's not just a piece of literature that we read for our interest or for our entertainment. The Torah is our guide. Well, our guide to what? What is it guiding us to do? If we understand well what is our purpose in life, which is the topic of Mesilas Yesharim, then the Torah comes alive. So I think that in this particular instance, although as I say, hopefully every time we combine the two, it helps us with understanding of the Torah. In this particular instance, I think it will do us very, very well. So let's tune in to where we are at in the Mesilas Yesharim. Last week we started a new virtue, and that was the virtue of Precious.
Excuse me.
Precious is separation, abstinence, perhaps a few other synonyms. But what was important about this is that Rabbi Lusato introduces Precious by saying that this is the virtue which begins the second half of the book. And we discovered last week, incredibly, that the chapter on Precious starts on page 92, which is literally halfway of the book. The book is 104 pages, and this starts on page 92.
To 104.
Well, not all of it is the text. It's additional supplements. But the actual sefer ends on page 184. So he says that the two parts of the book correspond to the two levels, tzidkus and chasidus. Tzidkus being righteousness, chasidus being piety. And the topic of our shiur last week was to define the two and to show the importance of both. Just very briefly, tzidkus, righteousness, is when a person fulfills properly all that he is commanded to do. If a person fulfills all of his obligations, he is righteous. His obligations to God. If a person exceeds those obligations, then he is a chassid, he is a pious individual. And we spoke at length of why is there even a need or a desire for going beyond, like the word dayenu, enough, just to do what we're obligated to do, enough, that's good enough. Why do we have to have another half about doing more than enough? Why do you have to do more than enough? Doing enough is plenty to keep us occupied. And again, briefly, our conclusion was, again, assisted with the parsha of last week, of the different parts of the Mishkan, the tabernacle. We have the furnishings which define the essence of the tabernacle, and then we have all of the planks and the curtains which provide the structure. The same thing is true in our religious life, or religious observance. There is the essence of what a man is striving to become, and then there is the structure, how to get there. Really, what a man ought to be striving is not to just fill out a checklist of things to do. The mitzvah is not just a checklist. The mitzvah, as we said, assist a person to become something. The chassid has already mastered the to-dos, and he is attempting to become that pious individual, which we're going to talk more about today in light of the Karbanos. But he is no longer living by the book. He is living on the plane of becoming that complete person. Sure, he has fulfilled all the obligations, but he hasn't stopped there. He's going beyond. It's not a question of getting extra credit. It's a question of going beyond the doing into the realm of becoming. Well, having discovered that Precious is the beginning of the Chassidus, the becoming, the pious individual, let us gain a better understanding of just what the particular virtue of Precious is, abstinence. What does abstinence mean? It basically means that, as Rabbi Lutzata says on page 92, our sages of blessed memory express the underlying principle of abstinence as follows. Sanctify yourself through the permissible. This is what the word abstinence actually means. To abstain and distance oneself from something, i.e., to deny oneself what is permissible, with the aim of setting up a barrier, preventing any contact with the actual prohibition. The idea is that one must distance himself and abstain from anything whose emergence may lead to evil, even though in the immediate present it does not lead to evil, and even though it is surely not a matter of intrinsic evil. To illustrate this, I'll share with you a beautiful analogy which one of the people I was studying this with shared. There's a young boy who unfortunately is diabetic, and he cannot eat sweets. And there's a great candy store not too far from his home. And his father sits him down one day and he says, "Son, I've got to tell you, as much as this hurts me, for your own good, you cannot eat sweets." And even though all the kids are going into that store every day and buying candy, you cannot eat those sweets. Okay, father gives him his lecture and goes off on his way. The mother hears this, and she takes the son aside and says, "Listen, I know how hard it is for you. You're going to be walking home from school with your friends, and they're all going to say, 'Let's go to the candy store.' And of course, you don't want to be the odd person out, so you'll go with them. And you'll stand there, and you're going to say, 'Well, I'm not going to buy any. I'm not going to have any, if my friends offer them to me.' That is going to be too hard for you. I don't want to see you in that position. Please, just don't go into the store. If you go with your friends, just stay outside. It'll be easier than having to go in and not eat." And then the boy, so he listens to his father, he listens to his mother, and then he's thinking to himself, "Well, that's going to be hard too. I'm not going to have a very good time just waiting outside with my friends go in. I'm just not going to walk home with them. I'm just going to walk home in a different route, and this way I won't even come near the store." So the analogy is great. What his father said is analogous to the laws of the Torah. God says, don't
carry on.
Let's give a good example. Yeah, don't carry on Shabbos. Like, I got to think of something where it has three levels. I should have thought this through. Don't eat non-kosher meat. Okay? That's what God says. The rabbis come along, they're the mother, and they say, now, I don't know if a good example of a rabbinic decree on non-kosher food. Okay. God says don't eat milk and meat together. Don't eat a cheeseburger. The rabbis say don't mix your milk and your meat dishes. Have separate dishes for milk and for meat. That's a rabbinic law. Because if you do that, you make one day come to have to cook them together. Now Precious would say go beyond the law, even of the rabbi's decree, and make a decree for yourself. So my decree is, I am not going to. I frequently have business lunches with my associates, who are not Jewish, and whenever I go in with them, I have a hard time. Because they're all ordering all their, you know, dishes. So my personal thing is, whatever, fill in the blank. I'm going to invite them to the kosher restaurant, or I'm not going to go with them. Something like that, where it's not really required, but a person says, I know myself, and I'm going to stay further away than even the law requires. And that is just in a very, you know, initial definition, that is what abstinence is about. Making a personal fence to keep oneself far from the transgression. But I have to tell you that if this is the definition of abstinence, then I'm not sure what it's doing here. Because if that's all abstinence is about strategic execution of one's observance of the Torah, it's just a way to get me to do what is actually required, then I would think that needs to be in the first half of the book. That has to be part of Tzidkus, because if I'm going to fail the test, then I'm not going to even fulfill the mitzvah. So this doesn't sound like something which is on a level of piety. This sounds like something that's necessary just to fulfill righteousness.
I don't follow
that? What Rabbi Lusatu is saying is that one must distance himself and abstain from anything whose emergence may lead to evil. Well, if it may lead to evil, then I'm not going to even be righteous. So I better distance myself just to keep myself from transgressing the law. Just like this boy. This boy, all he wanted to do was successfully follow his father's instructions. But in order to be successful at following his father's instructions, he had to follow his mother's instructions. And in order for him to be successful at that, he had to even add a further distance, a further barrier. But all it was just to toe the line. He wasn't trying to do any more. He wasn't trying to do heroics. He was simply trying to successfully follow what his obligation was. And therefore, I don't understand if all Precious is kind of setting up fences for yourself so you won't slip, then that really should be part of
Tzidkus. But it's not that. It's just the way to honor God.
But it's not real. But it's only honoring God because it, on the level of righteousness, it's only the way I can get myself to do what I have to do. True, I added more than he said, but I only did that so that I wouldn't fail to do what he said.
Or you wanted to honor God.
Well, he's defining it as make sure it doesn't lead to evil. And righteousness is also honoring God, but it's not on the level of piety. And second of all, another question is, Rabbi Lutzato asks himself, if indeed these fences are necessary, let's say if what the mother said isn't powerful enough, and we indeed need more than that, then why didn't the mother say that? Why didn't the mother know the nature of the child and tell him not to walk in by the candy store? If it's not, you know, if you say to somebody, you can't just tell, you know, an addict, you know, don't take substance abuse, you know, you can't just tell them if that's not going to work. You got to give him the structure so that he'll really abide by it. So why isn't that, in fact, obligatory? Why is it left to the realm of the individual? Okay, so our conclusion is, and if we read Claire, you know, if we keep on reading this, we'll find out that precious is not simply a practical strategy on how to successfully be a tzaddik. No, precious is really in the realm of the pious. And the way we're going to come to understand that is by going back to the karbanos. Yes. Let's just ask a question to clarify what we've said so far. Because I don't want to lose people's train of thought. If it's something additional. Okay.
It's hard for me to verbalize.
Okay, we'll get back to that. I'm sure we can talk about it later. So, what is really a karban all about? Now, we've talked about this in the past, karbanos. We even spoke about it this year when we became aware of the Rabbi Weinberg's principle of the old world and the new world. But today, this week, I'm going to share with you something that's new to me. A new insight, a new perspective on karbanos, which I learned right here from the Art Scroll. And it is based on the teachings of the Shloah HaKadosh. The Shloah is that's an acronym for his Sefer Shnei Luchos HaBris. He lived maybe 300 years ago. There were four individuals in the last 500 years that earned the title HaKadosh, the Holy One. And he's one of the four. Very Kabbalistic, very revered. He starts off by citing the beginning of the Parsha. He called to Moshe, and Hashem spoke to him from the tent of meeting. Daber al bnei Israel, v'amar talehem, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, Adam, ki akriv mikem korban l'Hashem. When a man among you brings an offering to Hashem, etc. These are the different offerings that he may bring. Take it later. These are the different offerings that he may bring. He may bring the ola, which is the burnt offering. He may bring the mincha, the meal offering. He may bring the peace offering, and that is the entire parsha, all the different kinds of offerings. Now, on the word,
when a man,
not on the word Adam, but on the word, well, let's see.
Rabbi, this is too good.
Adam, on the word, just write it down so you don't forget it. Adam, why does it say Adam? Rashi asks, Lama Nemar, Ma Adam Harishon, Lo Hikriv Min Hagezel. Just as Adam HaRishon, the first man, when he brought an offering, he did not bring from anything that was stolen, Shakol HaYashalo, because all of it belonged to him, Afatem, Lo Tashrifu Min HaGezel. You also, when you bring your offerings, don't bring something that's stolen. Okay? For that reason, the Torah chose the word Adam. It's like the first big word in the Parsha, Adam. Why? Make sure you don't bring a stolen cow, or a stolen sheep, or a stolen goat. This is what Rashi says. And the Shloah asks the question. First of all, it seems very petty. Second of all, to make a whole word Adam based on this innuendo, this implication. Second of all, how can God compare us to Adam? Mm. Don't bring from anything stolen, just like Adam didn't. Yeah, thanks. Adam had no choice. I mean, everything belonged to him, as Rashi himself says. So it's not a trick. It's a trick for us. There's something deeper here.
I know what it is.
Okay. So do I. So the Shloah says as follows. I'm going to not read everything, but you can read it. He talks about Adam in the Garden of Eden. He was supposed to work and guard it. What is this work in this garden? Okay, listen to this. Adam's mission was to make himself an offering in his lifetime. By dedicating himself unreservedly to God, on God's throne of glory, there is an image of a man. Every human being has his own image above, his ideal spiritual self, which represents his goal and his potential. Man's soul is placed in an earthly body so that he can surmount the challenges of material life and raise himself up to his personal heavenly self, to unite his earthly self with his higher self. Just as everyone has a body and a soul, and his mission is to triumph in the eternal struggle of body versus soul, so too man must struggle to live up to the summons of his higher self. When we're told that we have a soul, you know that our soul is unblemished. We get tarnished because once the soul gets put into the body, so the body, you know, is a macher. The body tries to push the soul around and say, let's do it this way. And the soul has like a little weak voice that says, but do you know who I am? Do you know what potential I have? Do you know where I come from? And I want you to come with me. I want you, body, to enable me to develop in this world that potential. And the body says, nah, be quiet. Let's just enjoy ourselves. You know, let's go on a cruise and wine and dine. And the soul says, but there's more to you than that. There's more to you than eat, drink, and be merry. The soul is our higher self. There's a higher ideal we must seek to capture in our mundane lives, as the Kutzker Rebbe expressed in pithily on the first verse. As for the heavens are Hashem's, but the earth he has given to mankind. So he says, the heavens are already heavenly. God does not need man to improve upon them, but he has given us the earth that we might make it heavenly as well. The ultimate purpose of Adam, of man, of Adam, was to strive in this life to raise himself to his higher soul potential. And basically, what that would mean is to make himself the korban. Make himself the korban. So there's two types of korban, and we might even suggest that the korban that we're reading about here is for the tzaddik. The person who just wants to follow the laws and check it off and say, I did it. So there's a whole litany of different animals that you bring on different occasions, and if you do it, then you can say, God, I have fulfilled the commandments of bringing the korbanos. But for a chassid, the animal is just a
vehicle.
A vehicle. It may just even be an analogy. The chassid understands that he is to be the offering. He was the offering. That means he is to devote himself, just as the animal, now its whole being will be subsumed. The animal will become nullified to the service of God, so will the human being. So will the man, Adam. In other words, instead of letting the body dictate what his agenda is, the man will be completely and wholeheartedly devoted to God. What did you have in mind for me? What is the potential that you imbued in my soul? And I will work solely for that goal. I will not be distracted by my selfish bodily desires and bodily agenda to get whatever I would like out of life. I am here to develop myself in the way that you made me in my higher self potential. That is the idea of a man being a karban. And in fact, if you look at the verse, you could actually see this concept in the verse. Ve'amarta aleihem, say to them, Adam ki akriv mikem karban lashem. When a man will bring from you, or Adam, mankind, bring from you a karban, make yourself a karban. With this, the Shulah explains that that's what it means, don't steal. The deeper meaning for that is, Adam, don't steal from your offering. You be the offering. If you're going to devote yourself any less in your life than the maximum God would have, to steal away the divinely conferred potential and misappropriate for himself, that's stealing. God gave you potential. God gave you abilities. God gave you spiritual greatness. And you're using your life and spending it on mundane pursuits. You want to get rich. You want to get kavod. You want to get all the things that we talked about. You want to lord over people, whatever it is. And you're not devoting your energies and your talents to become the higher self that God made you. You're stealing from the karban. You're bringing your life is stealing, is hijacking all that potential that God gave you and using it for a different purpose. That's what the Torah is saying to the chassid about a karban. I'm not doing a great job in expressing this, but I just learned it. But anyway, so back to precious. Our question was, is precious just a strategy for a person to fulfill his obligations so that he won't slip? So that the child is only staying away from the candy store so that he won't drag himself in there and eat the candy? No, precious is more than that. What precious is a person saying, I want to shoot to be a korban. I don't want to just bring korbanos, bring animals. I want to make myself into a korban. I want to devote myself wholeheartedly into developing the higher self that God has given me. In that case, the mitzvos are not enough. The mitzvos are not enough. The mitzvos are enough to satisfy the requirements of a Jew. But as Rabbi Luzzatto himself, he says, the reason why these acts of abstinence are not legislated in the Torah, listen to this. The sages enacted decrees only that the majority of people could abide by. The majority of people cannot attain piousness. It is enough of an achievement for them to be righteous.
Page 97.
However, those singular individuals among the nation whose desire is to attain the closeness of the Blessed One and to bring, through their merits, spiritual benefits to the remaining masses. By the way, pious people don't live for themselves either, you should know. Pious people, part of their piety is that they feel everybody else's soul too. And they seek to elevate themselves and the rest of mankind along with them. That is an important ingredient of piety, and one should not question, if a person is truly pious, one should not suspect them of being somehow separatist or looking out for number one. A true pious person is every time he prays, he or she prays, they're praying for the well-being of others, both people that they do know and people that they don't know. And when they do their mitzvahs, they are having that in mind as well. So they recognize their gifts. Perhaps they have learned through life experience something that has shaken them, that has turned them into, perhaps it was an illness, it has turned them has catapulted them to another level of existence. And they are now striving for their higher self. So there has to be some room for the pious ones to grow as well. the Torah does not legislate piety. We spoke about this last week. Torah legislates righteousness. And in the legislation of righteousness, you bring animal offerings. You bring korbanos. But the truth is that the Torah is also illustrating and giving us the framework for piety. And the piety of the korbanos is go beyond the animal and become that korban. And therefore, a person who is embarking on the level of precious, he's not just doing it as a strategy, just so that he'll be righteous. What he's doing is he's going above and beyond. He's saying that it's not enough just to check off, I didn't eat the milk of the cheeseburger. But God, I spend my energy separating myself from the mundane so that I can focus myself more on spiritual matters, even the things that you have permitted me to do that is not my preoccupation. I don't go around every night looking for a different kosher restaurant at which to dine. That is not my focus. I separate myself from that, but my purpose is to become a korban. My purpose is to make myself wholehearted and develop myself to my full spiritual potential. Why do we bother learning about this? Is this what we are expecting the normal average Jew on the street to do? Not in the implementing stages, but certainly in our consciousness. Certainly to know that the Torah is the vehicle for anyone to reach the highest level. And in fact, the stories in the Chumash are all about Hasidim. As we said last week, you don't think Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, you think they were just tzaddikim? You don't think they were Hasidim? And you don't think that we absorb their essence into our consciousness and we think about them all the time, and our idea of a Jew is really a Hasid? And we are capable with our minds and with our understanding that God has granted with us to conceive, at least on a conscious level, to conceive of perfection and developing a pure self. When it gets down to the implementation, this was our message of last week, we have to start at the beginning, we have to build structure, we have to work on, the most basics first, studying the Torah, becoming watchful, becoming more zealous, just to hopefully fulfill as much of our obligations as we can. But that does not preclude our studying of the higher levels as well. And korbanos, really, who can understand korbanos on a simple level? It certainly doesn't fit in with the life of your average Jew. Clearly, the Torah is filled with higher, more spiritual concepts. And we are trying to get our hands around it a little bit. And I think that through the study of the Path of the Just, as he takes us through the various levels of human existence, we can start to have a little bit of a glimpse of what a korban really is.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.